We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Away we go, episode 808 of the Al Galdi podcast. It is Thursday, April 18th, 2024. 1 week away are we from the 2024 NFL Draft's first round, which is on Thursday night, April 25th. 1 week away are we from finding out what happens with the Commanders' number two overall pick in that 2024 draft. How are we feeling? Are we confident? Are we excited? Are we perhaps scared? Maybe we're all of these things. Do you remember when Jesse Spano, on the all-time great television show Saved by the Bell, got hooked on caffeine pills? She was both excited and scared. Take a listen. Yeah, I'm so excited and yet so scared. If you're feeling this way about this Commander's decision via this number two overall pick, that's okay. It's okay to be both excited and scared. We are here for each other on this podcast. Hello and welcome to this Thursday installment of the Al Galdi podcast, what was, as of Wednesday night, the number 66 podcast in the country in the U.S. football category on Apple Podcasts. Number 66 among the who knows how many thousands of football podcasts in this country. That is a credit to you, so thank you. Next segment, I will react to a certain something that came out on Wednesday morning. That certain something is an ESPN piece that detailed former New England Patriots head coach Bill Belichick not getting another head coaching job this offseason. The piece includes new details on what exactly was the deal with the Commanders and Belichick. Some very interesting stuff. And then after that, part two of my two-part conversation with Pro Football Focus lead NFL draft analyst Trevor Sikkema in preparation for the Commanders' oh-so-important 2024 draft. We on Wednesday's show, episode 807, engaged in part one, which featured Trevor going in-depth on why the Commanders, with their number two overall pick, should take North Carolina quarterback Drake May and not LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels. We in part two of the conversation are going to get away from Drake May versus Jaden Daniels and focus on a variety of other topics, including Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy. Should the Commanders be considering taking McCarthy? You'll hear Trevor's analysis of McCarthy. Trevor will explain why the Commanders traded quarterback Sam Howell. Trevor will assess the great offensive tackle class in the 2024 draft and whether the Commanders, with their 2 second-round picks and 3 third-round picks, should be looking to trade back into the first round. Trevor will give us his thoughts on Commanders general manager Adam Peters and Commanders assistant general manager Lance Newmark. All of that and more with Trevor Sikkema coming up. Also on the show, I will discuss daytime wins for the Nationals and Orioles on Wednesday. The Nats won at the Los Angeles Dodgers 2-0 on Wednesday to win the series 2-1 and to complete a 5-4 road trip in California. Terrific work by the Nats. Terrific work by starting pitcher Jake Irvin. 6 scoreless innings, 6 strikeouts versus 1 walk. And the O's walked off the Minnesota Twins 4-2 at Oriole Park at Camden Yards on Wednesday afternoon, completing a 3-game sweep. Center fielder Cedric Mullins, a walk-off, 1-out, 2-run homer to right field on a 1-2 pitch. The O's hit exactly 3 home runs for a 5th consecutive game, marking the first time that the O's have hit at least 3 home runs in each of at least 5 consecutive regular season games since August 1996. And the Orioles starting pitcher for this game on Wednesday afternoon was Albert Suarez. He's in his age 34 season. He on Wednesday afternoon pitched in a Major League regular season game for the first time since September 26, 2017, and he tossed 5 2/3 scoreless innings. The O's are rolling right now, people. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me, the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Lots of feedback on the Capitals making the Stanley Cup playoffs, thanks in large part to the Caps winning each of their final 3 regular season games, including the regular season ending and postseason spot clinching 2-1 win at the Philadelphia Flyers on Tuesday night. The Caps, via that victory, clinched the Eastern Conference's second and final wildcard spot. As I said on Wednesday's show, episode 807, this to me is the most improbable Caps postseason appearance in franchise history, given that the team is in the midst of a retool and given that the team was a seller regarding this season's NHL trade deadline and given so many other factors with the team this season. From Christopher Davis on X, best sports team in D.C. Thank you for that, Christopher. Well, the Caps certainly are the Washington, D.C. area sports team that has made the postseason with the highest frequency. As I've noted, the Caps making the Stanley Cup playoffs this season marks the team making the postseason for the 33rd time in 41 seasons. 33 out of 41 seasons. And yes, 8 teams from each NHL conference make the Stanley Cup playoffs each season. But still, 33 out of 41 seasons, and the Caps, for the majority of their playoff appearances during the Alex Ovechkin era, have made the Stanley Cup playoffs via finishing first in the team's division, not via sneaking into the postseason, via a bottom seed. This is the 15th playoff appearance for the Caps in the Alex Ovechkin era. 10 of the playoff appearances have come off the Caps finishing in first place in their division. From Caps Commander 21 on X, very encouraging for the future, and for the first time in forever, they have cap space. Get Ovi a playmaker. Thank you for that, Caps Commander. Good point on the Caps having salary cap space. They seemingly have had minimal wiggle room with the cap for years. You wonder if the team making the Stanley Cup playoffs this season changes how the team will approach this coming offseason, especially if the team wins a series or two or more this postseason. From Mike on X on that 2-1 win at the Flyers on Tuesday night, a game in which top line right wing TJ Oshie scored an even strength empty net goal exactly 17 minutes into the third period for a 2-1 Caps lead. Writes Mike, an interesting twist at the end. Philly pulled its goalie just after Detroit had eliminated the Flyers. Not sure if the Flyers knew. Anyway, no reason to pull the goalie once they were eliminated, but I'll take it. The Caps have lots of vets and lots of young faces, an interesting team. Thank you for that, Mike. Flyers head coach John Tortorella, during his postgame press conference on Tuesday night, said that he did not know that the Flyers had been eliminated once the Detroit Red Wings' eventual 5-4 shootout win at the Montreal Canadiens on Tuesday night went to overtime. The Red Wings earning at least a point eliminated the Flyers from postseason contention. Too bad, so sad. From Eric Smith on X, the last time that an improbable postseason appearance happened, it landed a World Series trophy. Thank you for that, Eric. True dat. Perhaps the most improbable postseason appearance in Washington, D.C. area sports history was the 2019 Nats going from 19-31 in the regular season to winning the World Series. Hard to top that, right? Although the Redskins over the last 20 years have had some improbable postseason appearances. Now, the team over the last 20 years has not made many playoff appearances, but a good number of those playoff appearances that the team has had have been improbable playoff appearances. 2005, from 5-6 in the regular season to 10-6 and a wild card spot, and then a playoff win. What remains the team's last playoff win? 2007, from 5-7 in the regular season to 9-7 and a wild card spot, and this happened off the murder of safety Sean Taylor. 2012, from 3-6 in the regular season to 10-6, ended NFC East title. 2015, from 5-7 in the regular season to 9-7, ended NFC East title. You know, Washington has not coasted to a playoff appearance since the 1999 season, when the Skins comfortably won the NFC East at 10-6. 1999, 25 years ago, a quarter of a century ago. That is a long time ago. Well, if you are planning a big event, you want to feel comfortable that it'll be a success, right? That's why you should get with Catering by Uptown. It is the best catering service in the DMV. Visit cateringbyuptown.com and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. If you are planning a wedding, a party, a corporate event, whatever, you want great service, but you also want a great price. Well, Catering by Uptown provides both. Catering by Uptown is a family business, and it specializes in handling everything so that you don't have to. Catering by Uptown understands that special events deserve to be celebrated in style. Catering by Uptown takes care of every detail so that you can enjoy your event. From putting together and executing a menu, to picking linens, to selecting an excellent florist, Catering by Uptown is committed to meeting your needs and exceeding your expectations. Great service, amazing cuisine, and reliability are the foundation of what makes Catering by Uptown one of the most referred caterers throughout Maryland, Washington, D.C., and Northern Virginia. Visit cateringbyuptown.com and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. That's cateringbyuptown.com and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. Well, before we get to part two of our conversation with Pro Football Focus lead NFL draft analyst Trevor Sikkema, I want to address something that came out on Wednesday morning. ESPN on Wednesday morning came out with a lengthy piece by ESPN senior writers Don Van Natta Jr. and Seth Wickersham and ESPN NFL insider Jeremy Fowler. The title of the piece, quote, "Voted off the island inside Bill Belichick's failed job hunt," end quote. The piece is about former New England Patriots head coach Bill Belichick this offseason not getting another head coaching job. And the piece includes juicy details about Belichick and Pat's chairman and CEO Robert Kraft, including Kraft supposedly having badmouthed Belichick to Atlanta Falcons owner and chairman Arthur Blank. As you likely remember, there was a lot of talk about Belichick potentially getting the Falcons head coaching job, but he did not get that job, and what Kraft said to Blank may be a major reason why. Well, this piece by ESPN also includes intel on Belichick and the Commanders. Now, the Commanders, as best as we can tell, never formally interviewed Bill Belichick in their head coaching search. His name came up from various national NFL insiders as being of interest to the Commanders, but I back in November was told by a source close to Commanders ownership that managing partner Josh Harris and the top limited partner in the Harris Group, Mitchell Rales, were not interested in hiring Belichick. But still, the Commanders Belichick stuff persisted. Our good buddy, Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio, who on this show is known as Fake News Florio, he at one point said that Josh Harris was enamored with Belichick. Florio, in a report that came out this past January 7th, said that, quote, "per a league source, Harris is enamored with the idea of Belichick coaching the Commanders. End quote. Just to establish the timeline here, it was on January 11th that the Patriots announced that they and Bill Belichick had, quote, mutually agreed to part ways, end quote, after 24 seasons for Belichick as Pat's head coach. Well, with all of that in mind, consider the following from this piece from ESPN. Quote, Washington seemed to be another good fit, and multiple sources said Belichick was very interested. He grew up in Annapolis, Maryland, and the combination of his hometown ties and football acumen might have helped the Commanders win and land a stadium in Washington, D.C., considered the most prized location for a new venue. Commanders minority owner Magic Johnson lobbied hard for Belichick to be the team's new head coach, sources said. Belichick spoke to new Commanders GM Adam Peters, a former Patriot staffer, and said he respected the job Peters had done in personnel since he had left New England, helping the Broncos and 49ers reach a combined 3 Super Bowls. However, principal owner Josh Harris, who had spoken privately with Kraft about Belichick, told confidants in early December that he respected Belichick but wasn't going to hire him. He wanted the same leadership structure he has with the Philadelphia 76ers and New Jersey Devils, a strong general manager over a head coach. Harris's hiring of the 44-year-old Peters as GM before he looked for a coach was a big tell that Belichick was not a fit, a decision that Johnson endorsed. A source close to Belichick said the coach had questions about working in a strong GM system. Washington decided to hire Cowboys defensive coordinator and former Falcons head coach Dan Quinn. The victim of the Patriots' 28-3 Super Bowl comeback had a job. The primary architect of that historic victory did not. End quote. So a few thoughts on all of that. First of all, once and for all, fake news Florio. Mike Florio, in a report that came out on January 7th, said that per league source, Josh Harris was, quote, enamored, end quote, with the idea of Bill Belichick coaching the Commanders. Well, Harris, per this ESPN report, quote, told confidants in early December that he respected Belichick, but wasn't going to hire him, end quote. So much for Josh Harris being enamored with Bill Belichick. And note that Florio reported that Harris was enamored with Belichick the month after Harris, per this ESPN report, told confidants that he wasn't going to hire Belichick. So another brick in the wall that is fake news, Florio. I, like many of you, did not want the Commanders to hire Bill Belichick as head coach. And I say this as someone who thinks that Belichick is the greatest head coach in NFL history. I mean, at this point, I don't know how you argue against that. Salary cap era, and yet this guy is Pat's head coach, won 6 Super Bowl titles, 9 AFC championships, and 17 division titles. And note, the AFC East titles for the 2002 and 2008 seasons were lost by the Patriots on tiebreakers. Belichick, as Pat's head coach, very easily could have had 19 division titles. But I did not want the Commanders to hire him as head coach. A, Belichick almost certainly wanted player personnel control, but his player personnel track record with the Patriots in recent years, really bad. And in the modern NFL, the coach-centric approach, while it can work, is difficult to pull off. There's too much that goes into being a head of football operations now to where the same person serving as both head of football ops and head coach is not as doable as it once was. B, the track record in the NFL of the head coach who wins a Super Bowl with one team and then becomes head coach of another team is not good. That next go-round as head coach rarely comes close to the go-round in which the head coach had that great success. See Jimmy Johnson with the Dallas Cowboys versus with the Miami Dolphins. See Mike Ditka with the Chicago Bears versus the New Orleans Saints. See George Seifert with the San Francisco 49ers versus the Carolina Panthers. See Mike Shanahan with the Denver Broncos versus, yes, the Redskins. You get the idea. And see, in an NFL in which the undeniable trend has been hiring head coaches who are younger and have primarily offensive backgrounds, Belichick is older and has primarily a defensive background. So I'm glad that the Commanders did not hire Belichick as head coach, and I'm glad that Josh Harris apparently saw the situation as I and many of you did. But this interplay between Harris and limited partner Magic Johnson stands out, doesn't it? Magic really wanted the team to hire Bill Belichick as head coach. Per this ESPN report, quote, Commanders minority owner Magic Johnson lobbied hard for Belichick to be the team's new head coach, sources said, end quote. We now would seem to know what these sporadic reports about the Commanders being interested in Bill Belichick were rooted in. The reports were rooted in Magic Johnson wanting Bill Belichick to be the Commanders head coach. But good for Josh Harris for telling Magic Johnson no. Now, we all like Magic Johnson. How could you not? But Magic's not a football guy. Magic is not part of the ownership group because of his football acumen. Magic is part of the ownership group because of his money, okay, and his business knowledge and his connections and his ability to connect with people and forge relationships and other reasons. There are many reasons to have Magic Johnson as part of the Josh Harris group, but I don't want Magic Johnson dictating or even heavily influencing Commanders football operations. You know, Magic running basketball operations has been iffy. Take a look at what happened with the Los Angeles Lakers during Magic's time as the team's president of basketball operations, February 2017 to April 2019. Things did not go so well for the Lakers during that time. So if Magic struggled with Lakers basketball operations, despite being, you know, one of the best Lakers players ever, heck, one of the best NBA players, period, ever, why should he have major input in Commanders football operations? The Josh Harris group, remember, has a lot of people. One of Harris's challenges as managing partner is managing these people. Listening to them, yes. Making them feel valued, yes. But also knowing when to say yes and when to say no. I do think that Harris, in telling Magic Johnson no on Bill Belichick, was the right call. Hey, if you enjoy this podcast, check out BGO Blind Pig, the official podcast of BGObsession.com. BGO Blind Pig is a roundtable discussion of all things Washington Commanders football. Lots of good and passionate Commanders conversation from Commanders fans who know the team well. You can find the BGO Blind Pig podcast on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts, or on any major podcast provider. Make BGObsession.com the home for your burgundy and gold obsession, and make the BGO Blind Pig podcast one of your weekly DC football listens.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, please consider following the podcast if you're not already doing that. Following the podcast is free. If you have an iPhone, you can follow the podcast simply by tapping the plus sign in the upper right corner on the page listing the recent episodes of this podcast. Time now for part two of our conversation with Pro Football Focus lead NFL draft analyst Trevor Sikkema. Trevor is the co-host of a really good NFL draft podcast, NFL Stock Exchange. You can follow Trevor on X at Tampa Bay Trey, and make sure that you check out PFF's mock draft simulator at pff.com/mock. This is your opportunity to become the general manager of your favorite team and select your favorite players in the 2024 NFL Draft. That's pff.com/mock. And with the draft a week away, PFF's big board can get you caught up on some of the best players in the 2024 NFL Draft. Head over to pff.com for some of the best analysis in football ahead of one of the biggest events on the football calendar. Trevor, great to have you back for a second consecutive show. You on Wednesday show, episode 807. Explain why the Commanders with their number two overall pick in the 2024 draft should take North Carolina quarterback Drake May and not LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels. I'd like to now get into Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy, who has come up as a potential target of the Commanders. You have McCarthy as your QB4 in the 2024 draft, with USC's Caleb Williams as the QB1, May as the QB2, and Daniels as the QB3. Do you buy into the J.J. McCarthy hype from a standpoint of some teams being really high on him?
I do. Yeah, I absolutely do. And I think, you know, when people look at McCarthy, you know, they wonder why he had this rise over the last couple of months, right? No football games have been played since the national championship in January. So you go, okay, how did we get to this point where we were talking about this guy as a second round pick? Now we're talking about him as, you know, a top five option. And I think the reason for that is, one, we're learning what NFL teams kind of think of these players a little bit more. So we're naturally talking about them a little bit higher in the draft. Two, I understand it, because if you believe that J.J. McCarthy gives you this Super Bowl caliber type of a ceiling, you gravitate towards that player. And as much as, you know, I would love to sit here and tell, like, I have a late first, early second round grade on J.J. McCarthy. I had the same thing with Jaden Daniels, late first, early second round grade on both of these guys. Would I love for them to go somewhere in the early second, late first round? Yes. It's not a reality. If a quarterback has the ceiling to be anything close to a franchise quarterback and a Super Bowl winning quarterback, they're going to get picked in the top 10. It means too much to these franchises for them to not take a swing at the bat of a guy who they have identified of saying, this player can maybe win a Super Bowl someday. And I think that's how we get to this point with McCarthy. And look, there's things that I really like about McCarthy. I'm going to be honest. I hated his 2022 tape. I thought his 22. When we were talking about him, it's like, oh, he'll be a top quarterback in this draft. Last summer, I'm watching his 2022 tape, and I was like, okay, I'm not saying that you're wrong, but I am saying that a lot has to change and a lot has to get better before we get to that point. But it did. You know, when I watched him in 2022, really did not have a good feel for pressure, was late on a lot of his reads, didn't have that consistent accuracy, just wasn't comfortable when they put the ball in his hands to really be an individual playmaker. He just was not comfortable outside of just facilitating a really good offense behind a really good offensive line in 2022. He wasn't. This past year, though, he stepped up big time. He was better at feeling pressure around the pocket. He was faster at getting through his progressions. He could anticipate better. And he had, here's the thing, more fearless throws, right? When you look at the volume stats for J.J. McCarthy, you could say to yourself, oh, he had like 200-300 yard games like in his career. Like, I mean, this is a game manager guy. Well, I would tell you this, 2022, definitely, they kind of just wanted him to be this game manager. But in 2023, they put him in a couple of situations where they said, okay, it's third and long, JJ. Like, we don't need you to pass for 400 yards for us to win this game, but we do need you to pick up a handful of these third and long situations to keep things moving. And he would. JJ is the best third and long quarterback that we had in this class from 2023's tape. So that gives me encouragement that it is still coming along for him, that there is still more juice to squeeze, if you will, that he can get better and continue to evolve and continue to get to a level where he could potentially be a playoff, maybe even a Super Bowl winning quarterback for you, because there was a definite progression from 2022 to 2023, especially in those big moments where they asked him, hey, team's still good around you, right? We still got good wide receivers, still got a really good offensive line, still got a really good run game. But in those situations where you could shine, you could stand out individually, I think he did more of that in 2023. So that's the encouraging part of it and why people talk about him with the big four quarterbacks in this class.
I have one more quarterback question for you, and it has to do with a former Commanders quarterback, Sam Howell. The Commanders on March 14th traded Howell to the Seattle Seahawks. Personally, I wanted the Commanders to keep Howell because I still view him as a young quarterback with upside. And to me, until the team has quarterback truly figured out, it should be retaining and developing as many young quarterbacks with upside as realistically possible. There are zero guarantees with whichever quarterback the Commanders get in the 2024 draft. But I'm interested in your opinion on this because Pro Football Focus was high on Howell going into the 2022 draft. He was the number 34 player on PFF's big board for the 2022 draft, in which the Commanders took him with the number 144 overall pick. Do you think that they should have traded Howell?
Yeah, look, I thought it was crazy that Sam ended up being a fifth-round pick. You know, I feel like, all right, it was a little bit lower of a quarterback class, but I was like, okay, well, somewhere on day two, Sam Howell's got to get picked. And that was kind of crazy to me that he didn't. But, you know, it kind of depends how you look at it, right? Because I think a lot of fans would agree with you. And it's logical to say, hey, you don't have a quarterback yet. This guy showed some promise last year. He's still a young quarterback. I mean, like, give him a shot. You know, it's a new coach. It's a new regime. It's a new everything there. You give him a shot to kind of prove himself. Like you said, until you have the quarterback question answered, you got to give yourself every chance you can to try to answer it as powerfully as you can. And that is logical. Franchises don't work that way, though. You know, like, they are not trying to get into a situation where, let's say they draft Jaden at 2. And let's say we get to the beginning of the season and they don't feel comfortable starting Jaden, right? Like, they're like, okay, well, we don't think he's ready. Let's throw Sam out there. Let's say Sam just goes on a run, right? 6-2 in the first 8 games. You know, let's say that they just have a run all the way to the end of the season. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, Sam Howell is the guy, right? Sam Howell brought us to an above 500 record. Let's say Jaden doesn't even start at all just because of how well Sam Howell is playing. They're above 500 record, maybe even sneaking as the wild card. Well, then guess what you got to do next season? You got to start Sam Howell at the beginning of next season. And then you just get into a situation where I don't think it's quite like the Mahomes situation or the Jordan Love situation where it was like, okay, very clearly this guy is coming in behind a veteran and eventually it is going to be their job, right? Those are a little bit longer timelines. Mahomes didn't start till the end of his rookie year. You know, Jordan Love obviously didn't start for a few years. And now we're seeing Love and he's fantastic. And many people listening to the show might be saying like, okay, that's a great scenario, right? It's a great setup as long as he comes in and starts eventually and he's great. But I think the franchise specifically, new ownership, new front office, new head coach, new look, new name, new everything from the last couple of years. Like, they want a new unified identity. And I think that if they're going to take a quarterback at number 2 overall, which I believe that they're going to do, I understand why they move on from Sam. Because they, as a business, as much as a football team, want to be able to sell. It is a new era in Washington. It's a new era with who owns the team, who makes decisions for the team, who coaches the team, and who quarterbacks the team. And I think they want a unified, there is no question about it, this is our direction moving forward. And so in that sense, I get why you trade Sam. For some people out there who are saying this, whoever we draft a quarterback hasn't even played down the NFL yet. That's stupid. That's short-sighted. I hear you. It's just how I think franchises operate. And so I get how they kind of came to that conclusion too.
And I hear you on what you're saying. And I do concede that it's easy for us on the outside looking in to say, hey, do this, do that. Okay. But when you're actually in the middle of the situation and you're living the situation day to day, there are realities that those of us on the outside looking in do not have to deal with. So much of the Commanders' conversation regarding the 2024 draft has been about the quarterbacks, and understandably so. But the truth is that day 2 of the draft, Friday night, April 26, could be a lot more eventful for the Commanders than day 1 of the draft, Thursday night, April 25th. The Commanders have 6 of the top 100 picks in the 2024 draft. Those picks are the numbers 2, 36, 40, 67, 78, and 100 overall picks. So the first round pick, 2 second round picks, and 3 third round picks. The Commanders have 5 picks on day 2. This draft is viewed as being excellent for offensive tackles. 7 of the top 23 players on Pro Football Focus's big board for the 2024 draft are offensive tackles. 9 of the top 39 players on PFF's big board for the 2024 draft are offensive tackles. Notre Dame's Joe Alt is number 5. Oregon State's Talisa Fuaga is number 13. Washington's Troy Fautanu is number 15. Penn State's Olu Fashanu, who went to Gonzaga College High School in Washington, D.C., is number 17. Alabama's J.C. Latham is number 18. Georgia's Amarius Mims is number 20. Duke's Graham Barton is number 23. Arizona's Jordan Morgan is number 37. And Oklahoma's Tyler Guyton is number 39. The Commanders, in having the numbers 36 and 40 overall picks, have the ammo to trade back into the first round. Should the Commanders trade back into the first round to get one of these offensive tackles, or is the class deep enough to where a good offensive tackle should be available at 36 or even 40?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, because you're sitting there with 36 and you got plenty of ammunition to move up. And I've thought about that a lot, I would say, like over the last couple of weeks, is we're not talking about Washington enough as a team that can, you know, move back up into the first round, right? I think that's the question that everybody loves. Like, ooh, who's going to move back in the first round? And often it's for a quarterback, right? We talk about, like, okay, well, is it going to be for Bo Nix or Michael Penix or something like that? And I think Washington doesn't get thought of because we know that they're going to take a quarterback at number 2. But to your point, I believe that they're going to have the ammunition to move back up into the first round if they want. The tricky part about it is there's a little bit of a gap with offensive tackles where you've got guys like, and I'm pulling this up here, like Joe Alt, Talisa Fuaga, Troy Fautanu, Olu Fashanu, J.C. Latham, Amarius Mims. All of those offensive tackles could genuinely be off the board by pick 20. Like, they could all be top 20 picks. I think they are that talented of players. So is Washington going to move up from 36 to, like, within the top 20? Maybe. That's just a kind of a pretty price to go up and get one of those guys. But if you want to go up and do it, you can. I think they have the flexibility to. But then instead, then there's a little bit of a gap, right? Because I think Jordan Morgan, you have a chance to be able to get it even just pick 36. I think Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, kind of the same way. Maybe you have to trade up a little bit to go get those guys. So maybe it is a case where you could end up doing that, but it's not a must, right? And then you get a little bit further down. There's a lot of really good, genuinely, there's a lot of really good developmental offensive tackles and even guys who you could start right away who maybe aren't going to be great for you right away, but as they kind of learn, as they get better, they've got really high ceilings. Kingsley Suamatia from BYU, Brandon Coleman from TCU, Blake Fisher from Notre Dame, Kieran Amagaji from Yale. Like, I think there are genuinely a lot of good players at offensive tackle that you don't necessarily have to trade up for. So if you love one in the top 20, like if you say, we got to go get Amarius Mims, like he's just so incredibly talented, we got to go get him. I think they have the flexibility to do that. But even if they didn't move, I think they'll have the chance to get a really nice offensive lineman somewhere at the beginning of day 2.
You joined Pro Football Focus in August 2021. You've analyzed NFL drafts for years. Is this the best offensive tackle class that you've evaluated?
Yeah. No, it is. It is. And I've been doing the NFL draft for a long time. You know, it's sometimes full-time in this industry, but I remember first mock draft I ever wrote, I still have it. It's from the 2011 NFL draft class. Shout out to Google Docs for keeping that for me. I was able to find that a couple of years ago. So, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, even just from an enjoyment level. And this is one of the deepest offensive tackle classes that I can remember. And that's what I think makes it a lot of fun, right? I'll go on radio shows or podcasts and they'll be like, oh, you know, like, what are some of the strengths and weaknesses of the class? And the reason why this class is so exciting is because at the premium positions, right? Offensive tackle, wide receiver, quarterback, lockdown corner, and even some good edge rushers, like those premium positions, this draft is so deep and there's so many great players. So, I mean, if you throw in interior offensive linemen as well, because I think it's a good guard class, I think it's a really uniquely deep center class as well. This is one of the best overall offensive line classes that I've, ever scouted that I can really remember.
Final question. The Commanders' new front office, Adam Peters as general manager, Lance Newmark as assistant general manager. Each guy has come to the team off having been a major part of the draft process for a team that has done very well in recent NFL drafts. Peters, the San Francisco 49ers, Newmark, the Detroit Lions. A big part of the excitement for us as Commanders fans is that it feels like the team in Peters in Newmark has two guys who can kill it in the NFL draft. What are your opinions of Peters in Newmark?
No, I think I love where they're coming from, right? I mean, like, these are two guys who, when I think about the team building philosophies that they would have, it's successful in different ways, right? I think that when you look at Peters and when you look at how that team was built under John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, really kind of steering the boat, and obviously Peters involved in that as well, it's getting the right players, right? Like, it's, we talk about it all the time, all the Kyle Shanahan types, you know, things like that. And man, you look at that defense and you look at the defensive coordinators and just coordinators in general that that team has come through, and the ability to have so much success and turn so many of those coordinators into NFL head coaches. Like, yeah, I think those guys are brilliant. Very clearly, they're showing that they're great coaches around the league. And Kyle Shanahan was fortunate enough to kind of bring those guys up through his tree and all that stuff. But I think that you also need talent, right? You need talent to really be able to stand out as coordinators. And so just year after year, no matter who the coordinators were, really on both sides of the ball, Peters was very much part of a front office that identified the right players, the guys that, okay, maybe they're not a second rounder to this team, but they're a second rounder to us. And I think that that's a really great mindset to have. And then the same thing with the Lions, the same thing, what we have seen with the Lions and what Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes have been able to build. Think about their draft that they had last year, right? You know, like Sam LaPorta and Jack Campbell and Jahmyr Gibbs, where they drafted him, and Brian Branch, where they drafted him. Like, people were like, ah, oh, you're drafted running back and linebacker and safety. Like, what are you doing? Like, these aren't real premium positions. They were some of the biggest difference makers that they had on the football team last year. And that scouting staff identified the right, like, and not just the right players schematically, like the right players, like DNA, you know, like makeup, character, these football guys that just made the team better. And I think those are two really good organizations to kind of pull from and just say, okay, we got to take what worked really well here, worked really well here. Those are teams that have built really great franchises through the draft over the years. And those are the characteristics that I'm hoping that they bring to Washington, because it could be really fun, especially with all the draft picks they've got.
Absolutely. Pro Football Focus lead NFL draft analyst, Trevor Sikkema. Trevor, I really appreciate your time. Thank you and all the best.
Yeah, of course. Appreciate you having me on.
All right. As we get closer and closer to the 2024 NFL Draft, if you are a Commanders fan, make sure that you're locked into this podcast. And if you're on Instagram, make sure that you're following at WSH on the Daily. WSH on the Daily just started in 2021 and yet has nearly 27,000 followers. The page is growing at a rapid rate, and the page is what its title suggests, daily. The page is updated every day. News, notes, reports, photos, graphics, all having to do with the Commanders. WSH on the Daily is a page that properly sources and vets its news and information. Doesn't just post anything that anyone says. WSH on the Daily responds to every single DM. WSH on the Daily is a page at which you can have fun. And WSH on the Daily always has a great fresh look. If you are on Instagram, check out at WSH on the Daily. And check out at WSH on the Daily's online shop, WSHonthedaily.com. Some outstanding gear, shirts, hoodies, excellent material, modern looks. So for smart, informative, fun, and engaging Commanders content, check out at WSH on the Daily on Instagram. And for great merch, visit WSHonthedaily.com. Well, a really nice job by the Nationals on their now concluded 9-game road trip in California. The Nats went 5-4 on the trip. They won 2 of 3 games at the San Francisco Giants, then lost 2 of 3 games at the Oakland A's, but then won 2 of 3 games at the Los Angeles Dodgers. So go figure. The only series that the Nats lost on the road trip was the series at the perceived worst opponent on the road trip, the A's. But Wednesday, a 2-0 win at the Dodgers to win the series 2-1 and complete the 5-4 road trip.
I'm proud of the boys.
Yeah, Nats manager Davey Martinez should be proud of the boys. The boys for this 2024 MLB regular season now are 8-10. The biggest bright spot for the Nats in this win on Wednesday was their starting pitcher, Jake Irvin. He in this 2-0 win at the Dodgers was tremendous. Irvin tossed 6 scoreless innings. He gave up just 4 hits, which were 2 doubles and 2 singles. He had 6 strikeouts versus 1 walk. Now, he was pulled after throwing just 73 pitches, but he over those 73 pitches threw a whopping 54 strikes versus just 19 balls. Irvin had a strikes to balls ratio of nearly 3-1. Jake Irvin in this regular season, 4 starts, an ERA of 3.13, and a whip of 1. Very good numbers. This is Irvin's age 27 season. The Nats took him in the 4th round of the 2018 MLB draft out of the University of Oklahoma. They last May 3rd recalled him from AAA Rochester. He at the time was their number 20 prospect per MLB pipeline. So this is not some first round pick who was a highly regarded prospect. This is a 2018 4th round pick who was the Nats number 20 prospect per MLB pipeline when he was promoted to the majors last May 3rd. Now, Irvin in the 2023 regular season at the major league level, 24 starts, ERA of 4.61, whip of 1.42. However, Irvin from last July 31st through last September 9th had a 7-start stretch in which he had an ERA of 2.75. And he so far in this regular season has been really impressive. Here was Davey Martinez during his post-game session with reporters on Wednesday evening on Jake Irvin, and then you'll hear multiple follow-up exchanges.
He's been unbelievable. He really has. He's been outstanding, actually. And, you know, he keeps getting better and better. The confidence keeps growing. So he gives us the innings we need. You know, we had a really big conversation after the 6th inning. I really felt like he let it air out there that last inning. And we talked a little bit. And we had a fresh bullpen, so we decided to go with the bullpen. But I can't say enough about what he's done so far. You know, he's learned a lot. You know, we talked about his growth last year. What do you want to accomplish this year? And so far, he's on the right path.
What's the decision there in terms of, obviously you're also kind of being conservative with some of your young guys early on in the season. Kind of what's the balance there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was throwing the ball so well. You know, he had some balls hit there hard a little bit, but, you know, we got the big double play by Joey, nice play by Joey. But, you know, like I said, you know, it was based on a conversation I had with him, and we decided to go with a fresh bullpen. But, you know, he did his job, you know, so, you know, I appreciate everything he's been doing.
He hasn't. That's obviously a really dangerous lineup. What were you seeing? How was he able to effectively attack them today?
Yeah, he was using his fastball, you know, both in and out, attacking the zone. When he needed to throw a breaking ball, he did. But his fastball was electric today. It really was. So he kept himself out of trouble, which we talked a lot. You know, instead of that big inning, he did that today.
He's had trouble at times maintaining his velocity, you know, deep into a start. Today, it was obviously there. What was he able to do to sustain that?
He stayed in his legs really, really well today. He really did. I mean, I was watching him throughout. Everything was very fluent. And like I said, he used his legs. When he does that, you know, you see the velo up.
Yeah, good stuff from Jake Irvin. He is coming along nicely, and he has really turned into a pleasant surprise for the Nats in their rebuild. Also, in this 2-0 win at the Dodgers on Wednesday, very good work by the Nats bullpen. 3 Nats relievers combined for 3 scoreless innings. Robert Garcia faced 3 batters and got 2 outs. Hunter Harvey tossed 1 1/3 scoreless innings with 2 strikeouts. He tossed a scoreless bottom of the 8th despite facing the Dodgers numbers 9, 1, 2, and 3 batters. Gavin Lux, Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, and Freddie Freeman. And Kyle Finnegan tossed a perfect bottom of the 9th for the save. The Nats on Wednesday scored 2 runs in the top of the 1st, and those ended up being the only 2 runs in the game. The Nats for the game scored just 2 runs, totaled just 4 hits, did work 4 walks, but struck out 11 times, went 0-2 with runners in scoring position, and yet won the game. When you have really good pitching, you can afford to score just 2 runs and have just 4 hits and strike out 11 times. And both of the Nats' runs and 3 of the Nats' 4 hits came in that top of the 1st, which was highlighted by another C.J. Abrams home run. Abrams, as the Nats starting shortstop and number one batter, went 1-for-4 with a solo homer. He and that Nats two-run first had a leadoff homer to right center field for a 1-0 Nats lead. C.J. Abrams is killing it right now, man. He, for this regular season, has a slugging percentage of .656, 10 of his 18 hits are extra base hits. 5 home runs, 2 triples, and 3 doubles. He has been great. The Nats' other run scored on a Joey Meneses RBI sack fly. He on Wednesday started for the first time in this series. Meneses has been struggling. He on Wednesday as the Nats' starting first baseman and number 5 batter went 0-for-2 with a walk and an RBI sack fly. And he had a stolen base. Meneses in that Nats' 2-run first had a 1-out RBI sack fly for a 2-0 Nats lead. And Meneses in the top of the 6th drew a 2-out 11-pitch walk despite having been down in the count at 1.12, and he had a steal of second base. No game for the Nats on Thursday. Next up for them is a 6-game homestand, starting with a 3-game series against the Houston Astros at Nationals Park this weekend, during which the Nats will conduct a 5-year anniversary celebration of their 2019 World Series championship team, as we have the matchup that we had in that 2019 World Series, right? Nats versus the Astros. Although the list of current and former players who were on the 2019 Nats and will be attending the celebration is rather underwhelming. And among those not listed as attending is starting pitcher Steven Strasburg, even though his contract situation with the Nats reportedly has been resolved, and he now has officially retired. So the MVP of the 2019 World Series is not scheduled to attend the 5-year anniversary celebration of the 2019 World Series championship team, to say nothing of a number of other key players from the team who are still playing, but now with other teams. New York Yankees outfielder Juan Soto, Philadelphia Phillies shortstop Trey Turner, Texas Rangers starting pitcher Max Scherzer, Los Angeles Dodgers reliever Daniel Hudson. You get the idea. All of those guys not attending. Makes you wonder if we should even be having this 5-year anniversary celebration of the 2019 World Series championship team. But you know what? If you're going to one of these games and the Nats are honoring the 2019 team, you can still have a good time. You know, I guess just don't get too caught up in who isn't there. Anyway, game one for the Nats against the Astros at Nationals Park Friday evening at 6:45. Mackenzie Gore will be the Nats starting pitcher. Game two, Saturday afternoon at 4:05, Trevor Williams will be the Nats starting pitcher. And game three, Sunday afternoon at 1:35, Mitchell Parker will be the Nats starting pitcher. Well, what was going on in your life in August 1996. Many of you probably weren't even born yet. August 1996, I was 16 years old and was working at Moto Photo in Cabin John Shopping Center in Potomac, Maryland. That's what I was doing in August 1996. August 1996 had been the last time that the Orioles had hit at least 3 home runs in each of at least 5 consecutive regular season games. Until now. Wednesday afternoon, a 4-2 walk-off win over the Minnesota Twins at Oriole Park at Camden Yards, completing a 3-game sweep and putting the O's again, Joe Angel, in the win column.
And the Orioles again in the win column.
Yes, Joe, the win column. The O's now have won 4 consecutive games in 7 of the team's last 9 games, and the O's for this 2024 MLB regular season now are 12-6. And yes, the O's in this game mashed more home runs. The O's hit exactly 3 home runs for a 5th consecutive game, marking the first time that the O's have hit at least 3 home runs in each of at least 5 consecutive regular season games since August 1996. Now, the O's in this game only had 5 other hits, all of which were singles, and the O's did draw no walks, and the O's did strike out 12 times, and the O's went 0-for-1 with runners in scoring position, a mere one at-bat with a runner in scoring position the entire game. So beyond the homers, not much offense for the O's, but the homers happened, and the O's overcame a 2-1 seventh inning deficit. Cedric Mullins, he is the Orioles starting center fielder and number six batter, 1-for-4, but the one was a walk-off home run. Mullins had a walk-off, one-out, two-run homer to right field on a 1-2 pitch for a 4-2 Orioles win. Mullins is playing really well. He, for this regular season, has a slugging percentage of .552. Gunnar Henderson, he is the Orioles' starting shortstop and number one batter, went 2-for-4 with a solo homer and a single. Henderson in an Orioles one-run first had a leadoff homer to right center field on a 1-2 pitch for a 1-0 Orioles lead as Henderson homered for a third consecutive game. That homer went a projected 416 feet per Statcast. Henderson for this regular season has a team-leading 6 home runs and has a slugging percentage of .603. And Anthony Santander, the man known as Tony Taters, he hit a tater. He is the Orioles starting DH and number four batter, went 1-for-4 with a game-tying solo homer. Santander in an Orioles one-run seventh had a one-out solo homer to left center field to tie the game at 2. That homer went a projected 402 feet per Statcast. The O's are hitting homers like crazy right now, and this is despite catcher Adley Rutschman not hitting for much power, and is despite outfielder Austin Hayes struggling. Hayes is no longer a usual starter. Think about what might be if/when those guys get going. But as much as the home runs by the O's were a big deal in this game, how about the Orioles starting pitcher for this game? Their starting pitcher was supposed to be Tyler Wells, but the O's on Tuesday evening announced having placed Wells on the 15-day injured list, retroactive to April 13th, due to right elbow inflammation. And so the Orioles starting pitcher for this game was Albert Suarez. Who? What? Yes, Albert Suarez. And Albert Suarez did a very nice job in a spot start. The O's on Wednesday morning announced having selected the contract of Albert Suarez from AAA Norfolk. The O's got Albert Suarez via signing him to a minor league contract last September. And Albert Suarez, in this 4-2 walk-off win over the Twins on Wednesday afternoon, pitched in a major league regular season game for the first time since September 26th, 2017. If you could believe that. September 26, 2017, and he, in what is now his age 34 season, did well. He tossed 5 2/3 scoreless innings. He gave up just 3 hits, which were 2 doubles and a single. He had 4 strikeouts versus no walks. He did issue a hit by pitch and a wild pitch, but he threw a lot of strikes. 75 pitches, 50 strikes versus 25 balls, a strikes to balls ratio of 2-1. Again, he had not pitched in a major league regular season game since September 26, 2017. This was O's manager Brandon Hyde during his postgame press conference on Wednesday afternoon on Albert Suarez, and then you'll hear multiple follow-up exchanges.
Pounding the zone with his fastball. First, I just want to give credit to our pro scouting department, front office. That's an amazing sign right there. Helped us win a Major League Baseball game and looks outstanding. So to go out and find someone like that that's 35 and hasn't pitched in the big league since 2017 and go have that kind of performance out, did more than what we asked him to do. I think he threw 4 1/3 his last start or his last time out, and he goes out and goes into the sixth inning against the Major League Baseball team. Just a credit to everybody there especially to him, but I want to give a shout out to our pro scouting department for finding a quality pitcher and person like Albert.
What made him so successful tonight?
Well, it was what we saw in spring training where he just throws a ton of strikes. So fast, aggressive with his fastball. It's got a ton of life, 95 to 97. He's got confidence in his other pitches also. He just really knows how to pitch, but he steps on his fastball when he needs it. I was looking back at some innings on the iPad there. I mean, rarely misses a spot. So command of a 95 to 97 mile an hour fastball and is able to do things with his cutter and his changeup also.
Brendan, I know he's called up on short order, but is there anything you observed today about, I mean, this guy had pitched in the big leagues since 2017.
It's amazing.
About the significance of being back at this level for Albert.
Well, I know he's very thankful to be back in the big leagues, and he just told the group that. But we saw in spring training just how mature he is. He's a grown man. I mean, he just was appreciative in spring training. He was appreciative of the opportunity, and then, to go out and get a call late last night that you're starting in the big league team tomorrow. I don't know what he, I don't know if he slept last night at all, but it's just a really cool story.
Yes, it is. And Brendan Hyde was 100% right in crediting the Orioles front office for Albert Suarez. Obviously, you credit him, but this is yet another win for this Orioles front office led by Executive Vice President and General Manager Mike Elias. The Orioles bullpen in this 4-2 walk-off win over the Twins on Wednesday afternoon was a mixed bag. Five Orioles relievers combined to allow 2 runs in 3 1/3 innings. Danny Coulomb was charged with a run in 2/3 of an inning. He faced 3 batters and got 2 outs. He issued a 1-out walk in what ended up being a 2-run 7th for the Twins. Jacob Webb officially allowed 1 run in 1/3 of an inning. He faced 3 batters but got just 1 out as he and that Twins a 2-run 7th sandwiched 2 RBI singles around a swinging strikeout. But Keegan Aiken, Yennier Cano, and Craig Kimbrell all were good. Aiken faced 1 batter and got 1 out, which was a big 3-pitch swinging strikeout of the Twins' number 1 batter, Edward Julian, in the top of the 7th with a runner on first, 2 outs, and the O's down 2-1. Yadier Cadeau tossed a scoreless and hitless top of the 8th with 2 swinging strikeouts to preserve a 2-all tie, and Craig Kimbrell tossed a perfect top of the 9th to preserve a 2-all tie. Some big outs generated by Aiken, Cano, and Kimbrell, and the O's got the sweep. No game for the O's on Thursday. Next up for them is a 6-game road trip beginning with a 3-game series at the Kansas City Royals. Game 1 Friday night at 7:40. Dean Kramer will be the Orioles starting pitcher. Game 2 Saturday night at 7:10. The ace, Corbin Burns, will be the Orioles starting pitcher. And Game 3 Sunday afternoon at 2:10. Cole Irvin will be the Orioles starting pitcher. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Friday show, episode 809. We'll have much more on the Commanders. Also on Friday show, in-depth preview of the Capitals versus the Metropolitan Division winning and President's Trophy winning New York Rangers in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Have a great rest of your Thursday, and I'll talk to you on Friday.